holder in our branch, but he wouldn't pay his tithe, so they couldn't make him branch president. And he was very upset when Brian Kosecki was called to be our branch president, because he felt that he should have been called to be that. I think one problem that blacks are going to have in church, and I think this is true in Asia and in many other areas of the world, is that when a person is released from a position of authority, it's a loss of faith, and they have not come yet to the principle. And I think we have a little bit of trouble with this among ourselves too. That when we're released from an important position, to take another position with a little bit of loss of faith, and they have to come to the feeling that it's not where you serve in the church, but how you serve. Tracy was made a counselor to President Kosecki and was supposed to train him. While we were there, we trained a Relief Society president, and I think I wrote in my letters how you'd laugh if you could see me. Here I was leading the singing. I had never done any leading the singing in my life. And when we would have our music time in our Relief Society meeting, I had all the ladies lead with me, so that they could learn how to do the basic beats and learn how to keep time to music. And so here we all were, we were just singing, beating to the music, whatever it was. And before we left, one of the girls had become good enough at it. She is now leading the singing. We've also recently baptized a new black member of our church who has had training in leading black choirs in other churches, so we were glad to get her too. In July, the district was split. It was changed. The district presidency was changed. And then they took President Kosecki out of the branch presidency and put him in the white presidency, because they wanted a black representative in their branch presidency. And at this time, they made Tracy the branch president of Highfield, and the district counselor, and also the branch president of Bendura. Now, Bendura is a story all by itself. When Tracy became branch president, we came into possession of the branch records. And among these records was a receipt book, a baptismal receipt book, for recommendation for baptism. And here was one of the missionaries' old books that had all these baptisms. And we knew they were shown the names. We knew they were black names from the names. And where was Bendura? And where were all these people? They weren't coming to our branch, and we never heard of a branch in Bendura. And it turned out that an LDS Philippine mining engineer had come down from Botswana, some black country, to Bendura, which was a mine here. And he was LDS, he and his wife were LDS, and they had, with permission of the authority, started a small branch there. And the mission president sent in a couple of missionaries and a couple. The couple were very unhappy that the black missionaries and a couple baptized about 30 people, and they had a quite a growing branch there. And then the branch president was transferred out of there, and missionaries were pulled out, and the couple left, and the district didn't do anything with branch. They just let that branch sit there. They didn't send down leadership, they didn't visit them, they just went down to pick up the materials and left. And left the branch, and we hadn't heard about them, but the black members of the church knew about this branch. So Tracy took President Kosecki and Elder Chai and our two black, full-time black missionaries, and went down to see what the score was down in Bendura. And here they found a little 27-year-old member of the church, a woman, who had kept that branch going in the absence of this leadership by having a Holy Relief Society and primary. And she was so glad to see them. She says, I've been trying to get someone to come down and hold sacrament meetings. And she was just delighted to see them. And it was a really thrilling thing when we started holding meetings, second meetings with these people, to see these little barefooted black boys and girls singing, "I am a child of God." It was really quite touching. With the black government in Zimbabwe came universal education. They had quite a bit of the Rhodesians did quite well with the blacks. But when the black government came in, they started universal education, trying to get education for everybody in the country. And of course, this was difficult because of all the plant facilities and teachers, lack of teachers. But it had come to Hockfield to the extent that our board members were having, a hard time raising money for the school fees for their children. The average wage in Zimbabwe is about $136 a year. And a houseboy like we had, working 44 hours a week, would make $50 a month. So it was difficult to find money for the expensive fees. And so we soon turned our energies toward finding a way for the people to earn more money. And this is where our quilting project came in. And most of you have read that letter, so I won't go into that. Suffice it to say that before we left, Tracy has made 11 sets of quilting frames with very basic tools. He got quite clever at them. He could make them so that they sat on top of each other and would fit very snugly into a corner of their small homes. And by the way, most of the homes in the Highfield branch were from about 500 to 700 square feet. And you can't believe how many people could live in those homes. The Shona people are very family oriented. And if a member of their family needs a place to stay, regardless of the inconvenience to the family, they take them in and don't consider it an inconvenience. There was one family of Jowries the father worked as a counselor in the youth hostel for wayward youth. And every time I went there was a different family living there. I've often wondered how they slept. How they all slept in that little place, because there was always two, three, or four families living in children lying all over the place. We also had, when they say that your general purpose missionaries is surely true, you do a lot of things that you don't think that you're going to do. In May, for instance, we have the translation program dumped into, the Shona translation program dumped into our labs. And while we were there, I saw the Articles of Faith, the Joseph Smith pamphlet, testimony, Joseph Smith testimony pamphlet, and the sacrament prayers, all translated into Shona. And they were working on the principles of the gospel manual when I did. One of the most spiritual experiences that I had was when we were teaching the ladies to make quilts, we had several objects in mind. One was to teach them sanitation, because when you make a quilt, it can't smell like cooking odors that are in these small homes. It has to be clean, and there's dozens of little kids around. And in other words, it can't smell like aftercare. And so we had to teach them sanitation, we had to teach them to work fast, and then when they were through, put them in plastic bags so that they wouldn't absorb the cooking odors. But we also wanted to teach them how to save for their tithing, and how to figure their costs and their profits, how to buy another piece of material as soon as they have sold the quilt so that they would still be in business. And one of the thrills that I had was after teaching the ladies how they should figure their tithing was one day when the Relief Society president came up with her first earnings and said, "This is the Lord's money." And we just hugged each other. It was really a thrill for us. another one of our spiritual experiences was with our only convert. One day, the Jowers, the children in this family, the Jowers, were very active, but the parents very seldom came out. They were busy working on Sundays, but one day, Rosalind Jowery, who was our primary president, brought her sister with her. And we hadn't been there very long, and I said to the sister, "Oh, are you a member of the church?" I just assumed she was, because most of the family were members of the church. And she says, "No, I'm not." And I said, "You can't be a Jowery and not be a member of the church." I said, "Why don't you let us come and give you the discussions?" And she said, "I like that." So that's how we got our first lonely baptism. We learned that the Lord is no respecter of persons. He loves all of his children, black, brown, white, or whatever, rich or poor. All have an equal opportunity to gain their salvation. He offers his very highest blessings, co-heirship in his kingdom, with his son Jesus Christ, our elder brother, equally to all. Each must individually earn his or her own salvation. The church is the vehicle the Lord uses to help work out our salvation. Here too, we must accept individually or reject this help. We will all be judged on an equal plane with all God's children. There is no excuse. Each either accepts or rejects. But God is no respecter of persons. He will judge us by our individual works. While we must accept all men as our brothers and sisters and love them for the good in them and try to help them overcome the bad in them, just as they must help us do this. The church is true. I felt I had a testimony before I left, but it was a strong strength from Father and God. And we came to love the Lord even more. Joseph Smith is a prophet. And he was a prophet that the Lord used to restore the true church to the earth. The saying is that the straight is the gate and narrow the way. And I often think that it's narrow because to get through it, we have to scrape off a lot of our sins to make it, to enter in. It is our own fault if we are not one of the few will be that find it. That we all may find it through the grace and atoning sacrifice of our Lord Jesus Christ and through obedience to his law and ordinances is my prayer in the name of Jesus Christ.
Brothers and sisters, it was a thrill to walk in last Sunday and feel the love that you had for us. It was an experience we hadn't anticipated and we'll long remember it. We want you to know that we love you too. Most of our time in South Africa was spent in the Cape Town area, so I will talk about the things that occurred during the 5 months that we were there. On April the 19th of 1853, Jesse Haven, Leonard I. Smith, and an elder by the name of William Holmes Walker ascended a mountain that overlooks Cape Town, and it is called Lion's Head. And there they dedicated the land of South Africa for the restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. They had been called to this mission in 1952 by Brigham Young, who had called all of the elders of the church together in Salt Lake City to call a number of people on missions. On the 15th of September of 1852, a mere 5 years after the saints had first entered Salt Lake Valley, these three missionaries, plus 103 other missionaries, traveling without person script, went to New York City in wagons, and there went across the sea to England, and that's dispersed into Europe, Asia, and these three elders to Africa. In the Cape Town area, these elders were subjected to much derision. There was mob violence. The clergy and the press were against them. But in the first 6 months of their stay, they baptized 45 people. And 2 years later, well, a total of 2 years from when they arrived later, when they went home, they had baptized 176 saints. Now their record is better than the record that we have today. Today in the Johannesburg South African Mission, which also includes Zimbabwe, there are approximately 120 missionaries in South Africa and 8 in Zimbabwe. They currently harvest approximately 440 converts a year. By calculation, you would figure that those three early missionaries were 8 times as effective as those of us who have worked there in modern times. Today's converts in the mission are mainly non-white. The whites are not, in this day and age, receptive to the gospel. They have other things on their minds. I wrote in my diary something that you might find interesting. On Friday the 1st of April, 1983, where I mentioned this, this was a holiday in South Africa. They have two big holidays, one at Easter time and one at Christmas time, and they last about a month at each time. It's difficult for the missionaries to do much ceremonies there these times. So our zone had a braai, B-R-A-I-I. That's a barbecue in Southern Africa. Our mission zone had a braai today at Brother Nichols Hall, high on the mountains, at St. James overlooking Coffee Bay. The view was, well, fantastic. You could see Cape Point, False Bay, distant mountains, the sandy and rocky beach, the surf, windsurfers, swimmers, clouds, and distant horizons. Also, there were many other lovely homes back on the hillsides. I know why missionary work is so slow here. The people already think they're in hell. And they are, physically. The Cape is a garden of Eden. And that is true. It is so lovely and so beautiful. And their standard of living, particularly for the whites, is so high that they really do not think much about religion. In mentioning the high standard of living for whites, I should not neglect to say, however, that the standard of living for blacks and other races in South Africa is much higher than in any of the nations north of South Africa. Let me tell you who the people of South Africa are in broad general terms. 70% of them are Bantus, that is the native black population. 9% are colored. The coloreds are mixed race. Their color varies from almost white to very black. And most of these people are located in the Cape province of South Africa. 4% are Indians, and the balance of 17% are whites, commonly called down there Europeans. I don't have time to tell you a great deal about these particular people. The Indians are interesting. The Indians are to black Africa what the Jews are to Europe or America. They are the people with the businesses and the banks and the stores and the money, which is a very interesting phenomenon. It is for this very reason that all black nations, North or South Africa, had at some time in their recent history expelled all the Indians. Idi Amin expelled 60,000 Indians. They left their businesses, their homes, their money, all of their possessions behind. All they could take on the airplane was the shirt on their back, and the British government paid for the flying of all of these people to England. But of course the reason that they are disliked is that they are the people who run the businesses and have the money. Now in South Africa, the whites, in addition to the Indians, run the businesses. We were privileged to be asked to proselytize the people of Mitchell Plains who are colored. Mitchell's Plains is a new city near Cape Town, approximately 37 kilometers away from the city of Cape Town and about 27 kilometers from where we live in Mowbray. This new city has a population of approximately 200,000. It's very well planned. The access roads to the area are six-lane divided highways with beautiful plantings down the middle. Within the city itself, the main roads are six lanes, and then the lesser roads are four lane and two lane. Most of the houses are three bedroom. They have running hot and cold water, flush toilets, an electric kitchen stove, refrigerators, a dining room, and a living room. And most of the people whose homes we entered also had expensive stereos and color television sets. The colored people can acquire these homes for $12,000, which is a very heavy subsidy to those people by the South African government. In general, the place is clean, although there are sections of the city which tend to be run down, even though the city is only a couple of years old. We also have fast electric train service in town, and buses. There's room for a flower garden and lawn in the front yard, parking for your car, and space for a vegetable garden in back. Tracking is easy in Mitchell Plains. And to give you some idea of how easy it is, I want to check my diary here for something I wrote down. This is our statistics record. We have missionaries have a yellow sheet on which we fill out our statistics and mail them along with a letter to the mission president every week. For the week of the 23rd of January to the 29th, which was a Sunday through Saturday, and somehow I've written 1981 in here, but that can't be 1981, this is 1983. The number of doors that we knocked on that week, 42. The number of homes in which a discussion was given, 12. The number of families receiving discussions, and this usually exceeds the number of homes, because when they see you going in a home, the neighbors come in, or often the relatives are there, and there are two or three families at a time during your discussion. The number of families who heard the discussion that week was 23. And the number of persons involved in those families that received these discussions was over 100. So that's pretty good to have 100 people receive a discussion in 1 week's time. The number of families on whose door we knocked or were not home was 9. The number of homes who definitely turned us away at the door was 10. The number of homes where the family said they were busy but would give us a return appointment was 4. And the number of homes for whom we had a previous appointment who Dexter's, as we say, was for. So it is easy to get in the homes of people in Mitchell Plains, and we gave discussion after discussion until sometimes we felt we were getting black and blue in the face. We were glad it was that way. It was great to be able to teach them, to pray with them, and to enjoy their friendship and their love. In Mitchell's Plains, we were there day after day, sometimes driving out there a couple of times a day in our shiny yellow Toyota, which caught the eye of all the youngsters and sometimes even the older folk. And we were a more common sight on the street than the ice cream man. So everyone knew us. And everyone, which meant perhaps 100 families on Cambridge Street, came to know something about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We placed 130 Book of Mormons in the Cape Town area, most of them in Mitchell's Plains. In Zimbabwe, we placed 50 Book of Mormons with the testimony. Now, you have been a part of that program, and you may like to know how that works at the missionary end of things. You have sent us money for Book of Mormons, which we have purchased, and you have sent us your testimony and often your pictures. Sometimes we have had lovely colored pictures of the entire family. It is our option, as the Spirit directs us, as to how we place this Book of Mormons. So we place them all the way from GQing them on the streets, which means just asking them an open question about the Mormons, to maybe at the end of all our discussions, we would present them with the Book of Mormon. We distributed tons of church literature, and while we never baptized anyone on that street, we hope that someday some fruit will come from all the Book of Mormons and all the discussions that we have held with them. You could even use this Book of Mormon on the door approach, and if you did, it would go something like this. Before I say that, though, I remember very well, I was approaching some Muslims at a fruit stand. They don't believe in Christ, of course, and presenting the Book of Mormon. I think we must have given away half a dozen Book of Mormons to these Muslims. But you'd have been proud of Ida Rose as you saw her using this Book of Mormon and discussing the subject of Christ and our relationship to him. And she just about in a little while had a Muslim converted to her side. Well, we'd go up to the door and we could say, we could knock, and we'd say something like this. We'd say, "We're missionaries from America representing the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints." They may let you in right at that very point, but you could have said, "We have a book here. It's called the Book of Mormon, and we'd like to give it to you." Now, one thing about the colors of Mitchell's Plains is they can get anything for free that are ready to go. So you'd have probably been in the house already. But if you weren't, then you could say something like this. You would say, "This book is a gift to you from one of our neighbors who lives in America. And they have written in here a greeting to you. There is a photograph of them. And they also have said something about this book. Let us read it to you." And I would say, "This is what this neighbor says. 'Dear friend, we send you greetings and our best wishes from America. Please accept this book as a gift from us." Remember, this is the neighbor. This is what's written in the book. "The Book of Mormon is a very important part of our family's life. It is the foundation of our faith and a collaborating testimony with the Bible to the divinity and mission of Jesus Christ. One of our favorite parts is the book of 3 Nephi, especially chapter 17, which records the visit of Jesus Christ after his resurrection to his people in ancient America. We know that this book is true, and that you too can know this for yourself through study and prayer. Sincerely yours, the John Doe family, 147 Stadium Lane, Toby, Utah. Well, by then you would be in the house and you would say, let us tell you some more about this book. And then we'd point out a section we'd like them to read. And then we'd say, this neighbor of ours in America would like to have you write to him. Read the book. Write to them. Thank them for it. Tell them what you think of them. And whatever. Just correspond with them. And they would often take that up, it seems. Now, in spite of her efforts in Mitchell's Plains, there were only approximately 12 colored people who received all of the eight discussions.